For you, there were always a before and an after, Mario. Nothing in between, no compromises, no blurry zones. A clean cut, before, after. There's your life as a young man, a student at the Manzoni High School, shaping clay on the sly, as a game, an unconscious apprenticeship, a yearning. And there's the death of your father and your mother in the span of just a couple of years, in the middle of your adolescence. The youngest of four children, you took the advice of your brother Bruno. No more clay. You signed up for architecture. I had to show my brother I was making a choice, something that would lead to a future, a job, you said. Concrete, ready to make a sacrifice. You were a valley dweller, born on the Swiss border, inflexible, ethical, tough, not moralist. 3 years at the Polytechnic, participation in the Corrente di Vita Giovanile, and time spent with Giacomo Manzù. Then, the war. On 8 September 1943, you had no doubts and sought no compromise. You pledged all for king and country, not for Mussolini, not for Hitler. Locked in a cattle car, they took you to a concentration camp. 2 years of suffering and hunger. Luigi Carluccio was with you there. He did your portrait in a drawing. Emaciated face, dull gaze. When you got back home 5 years later, you weighed less than 44 kilos. You had problems with food for the rest of your life. You ate little, only mild stuff, and the smell of turnips reminded you of prison. What kept you alive in those desperate days in the German and Polish camps was willpower. To become what you had to become without compromising, a sculpture. You were from Tirano, Mario, from a mountainous region. I don't deny my valley dweller roots, you said. You can't take a fir tree and put it in the desert. Your roots stay with you till the very end. Art was learned from artisans, you thought. The craft, first of all. You learned how to use your hands, to understand the material, the clay, the bronze, in workshops. You got to know Giuseppe Pinella de Andreis, smelter of the MAF on Via Soperga, and became such friends that you followed him when he opened his art foundry with his sons, years later. You gave your word and you kept it. You worked on commission. You sculptured like an artisan, not like an artist, because you still didn't think yourself worthy of the latter name. At Lambrugo, you did the tomb of Giancarlo Puecher, the partisan treacherously executed when he had just turned 20 during your prison camp years. And there you are, all of you, already. You still don't know it. It is still not clear to you. You're still lugging around the history of art, Renaissance culture, classical architecture, but you are there. You only have to find your voice to make it resound in your works. Years later, you would say, surprised, that you had been seeking simplicity throughout your life. But I didn't think simplicity was so complicated. There were always a before and after for you, Mario. You met Elda in 1939. After came the war. Prison camps, the return. Elda was getting off a tram at Piazza del Duomo. She had made a mistake. She should have gotten off 2 stops earlier. You met like that, by chance. It was 1946. 5 years later, Carluccio was the best man at your wedding. The craft was not enough for you. Thought was also needed. You wrote for years about art, sculpture. Joe Ponti asked you to work with Domus. You loved Boccioni, Modigliani, the most European of Italians, since you couldn't identify with the line taken by national sculpture. It was not an act of arrogance, just an awareness. You loved the sensitivity of Arturo Martini, his poetic fantasy, and you restored Marino Marini to his greatness, recognized abroad more than at home. You wrote about Moore, Medardo Rosso. You wrote about Giacometti, who invited the anonymous Domus contributor to his home in Stampa. Twists of Fate. Both mountain men separated by just one crest and a border. Friendships can also happen like that, with words. To go home from Paris, Giacometti began to change his route. Instead of going through Zurich, he stopped in Milan. You wandered through the city together. You lingered by night at Piazza Vetra to look at that architectural eruption, the Basilica of San Lorenzo. And by day, you visited the chapel of Sant'Aquilino to look at the mosaics. And so on, from street, to Sant'Eustorgio, Sant'Ambrogio, San Simpliciano, Santa Maria delle Grazie. Never a museum. Always walking around the city. Except for the Pietà Rondanini, recently moved to the castle after the restoration by BBPR, a worthy pilgrimage. Then, together, outside of town, Morimondo, Chiaravalle, Viboldone, and up to the lake, and up even further to Yor Valtellina, even over the crest to the house of Giacometti's mother. A before and an after. It was time to prove it. You went to a bank to ask for a loan, the kind they grant to craftsmen. You were already married, already a father. You lived on that loan for 2 years. You stopped working on commission, stopped working with Domus. You had to sculpt, nothing else, to demonstrate where your path had taken you. Years of made desperate effort had loosened up your hands and your mind. You weren't scared of solitude. It was your natural state. You are an ascetic in the most authentic, original sense of the term. You were conducting research about knowledge through exercise. You trained constantly to improve your abilities, to look beyond material by means of material, to the point of suggesting the human figure rather than making it. Prior, post. In 1957, you had a debut, a solo show at Galleria del Milione. No longer an artisan, a scholar, a critic. You were an artist. Your sculptures were your voice. They spoke for you. The experience of your labor, the ethic of your vision, the rectitude of your life. Not words, works. The social whirl wasn't for you. You were not a party animal, not the kind of artist who hung around at Jamaica Bar. Perhaps this, too, is why they appreciated you more in other countries, after the surprising exhibition at Milione, where it seemed like an artist had appeared out of nowhere. Your works found their way into galleries, museums, and private collections in Canada, Israel, Australia, Switzerland, Japan, Germany. You had solo shows in New York. You worked on a monument for a square in Eindhoven. And in Milan, you stayed closed up in your studio. Before, once the war was over, on Via Pellegrino Rossi. After, on Via San Calogero and Via Pisacane. Until you finally reached Via Stoppani 7. Your house was right across the street. Gillo Dorfles lived close by, at Piazza Lavater. But you never went to see him. You preferred walking by the antique stores, talking with Giovanni Mazzaglia, who had a shop on Via Stoppani, with Cesati, a dealer in antique ironwork, on Via Baldissera, Carlo Ferrero on Viale Regina Giovanna, or Gustavo Mazzola, an art dealer, on Via Nino Bixio. To relax, you went to Cinema delle Stelle, on Via Frisi. Alone, of course. You loved Bresson and Dreyer. Your neighborhood was your world. It was enough for you. You had not been haughty or conceited. You were a loving husband, a tender father. Your friendships were intense, deep, joyful. The creator of jewelry, Karl-Heinz Reister, came to visit you at the studio, or the photographers Paolo Monti and Arno Hammacher. With Enrico della Torre, you spent long summers at Teglio or Aprica. At dinner time, you had long phone calls with Giovanni Testori. But you knew that an artist can express himself only in solitude, avoiding tricks, theories, and shortcuts. The artist had to become anonymous. Only his heart had to express itself. You remained in your studio on Via Stoppani, The outer physical manifestation of your inner world, its concrete outcome, ascetic, not unlike some of your bronze columns. You are like the figurine perched on top, an anchorite of art, a stylite monk. From the heights of your spiritual perch, you viewed the world with humility and dedication. You weren't looking for approval. You didn't want praise. You refused to make a memorial to the victims of Aprica because you did not agree with the client about the concept of the monument. Your sculptures were humble, like little country churches, yet they were monumental, not through size, but through scale, impetus. You refused to work for the 11th National Quadriennial in Rome because you were busy writing about the sculpture of Modigliani. You remembered what Anna Akhmatova said about him. He was surrounded by a compact ring of solitude. That of the true artist. Your solitude, Mario. They invited you to compete in Germany. In Belgium, they appointed you to the academy. In Austria, they held the traveling exhibitions of your work, precisely during the years of the so-called Milano da bere, of the widespread corruption of the followers of Craxi, so distant from your ideas of socialism based on solidarity, a sense of measure and reserve. You advised young sculptors to strive for the absolute, the essential, the true. Every sculpture, if he is a sculpture, is a primitive, you told Franco Russoli, Vittorio Sereni, Vanni Scheiviller. There were always a before and an after for you, Mario. Except for the last time, when the owner of your rented studio urged you to buy it. Either you buy or you leave. You owned nothing. You didn't even have a driving license. But how could you dismantle your whole world, your monastic retreat, constructed year after year, stone after stone, precisely when you were preparing a retrospective for Palazzo Te in Mantua? It was too much for your sensitive soul, a stabbing pain in your heart. Rushed to the Centro Cardiologico Monzino, hours of waiting on the stretcher. Then, when it seemed to have subsided, as you were lacing up your shoes for the trip home, came the heart attack. Just a few weeks before the retrospective was slated to open. An honour you had never sought, but one that came culpably too late in such an ungrateful country. You were not there. Cruel and coherent, the artist was not present. His works spoke for him. With your voice.